Sharks have everything scientists dream of. They're beautiful. God, how beautiful they are. They're like an impossibly perfect piece of machinery. They're as graceful as any bird. They're as mysterious as any animal on Earth. No one knows for sure how long they live or what impulses, except for hunger, they respond to. There are more than 250 species of shark, and every one is different from every other one. Peter Benchley's Jaws. My name is Becca Reiswig, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories. This week's going to be a little bit different than usual, though. This episode will not be a story, but instead a look at one of my favorite creatures, the shark. You see, this week is Shark Week on Discovery, one of my favorite weeks of each year, and I couldn't pass up the opportunity to talk about sharks. Rather than tell a story about a shark attack or a specific research trip, I thought we'd take a look at some facts about sharks. Now, I am not a marine biologist, nor have I ever dived with sharks or ever intend to do so, so any advice or ideas about interacting with sharks are not meant to be a guide, just my thoughts based on the information I've read and my non-existent experience. Before we get into today's episode, I'm going to give a brief background for Shark Week, for anyone who either has not heard of it or has only heard of it in passing. In brief, Shark Week is a week-long television event the Discovery Channel hosts every summer. Each night, they will air at least two new shark-related specials. Sometimes the content is documentary in nature, and sometimes it is more entertainment-based, with various celebrities being introduced to sharks, or the ill-fated Megalodon docufiction from 2013. The first Shark Week began July 17, 1988, with Caged in Fear, a special about motorized shark cages, and was followed by 10 more specials. The shark shows brought in viewers, and it quickly became a staple. The special has attracted celebrity hosts, such as Peter Benchley, the author of Jaws and co-writer of the movie, Adam Savage and Jamie Heineman of Mythbusters, Shaquille O'Neal, and this year's host is Josh Gates of Expedition Unknown, a show I have brought up a few times on this podcast. It is also important to point out that, as much as I enjoy Shark Week, Discovery has received a great deal of criticism for its less than scientific and more entertainment-based specials, i.e. Megalodon, The Monster Shark Lives, and other docufictions that perhaps may have been more at home on sci-fi. Regardless, there have been strides in recent years to lean on a more scientific foundation. Let's start our shark lesson with a fact that most of you have probably heard, if not repeated yourselves. Sharks can smell a drop of blood from a mile away. According to sharktrust.org, there is little truth to this statement. Up to two-thirds of the total weight of a shark's brain is dedicated to smell. They're supersensitive to smells that are important to their survival, including scents produced by potential predators, prey, or a mate. Some sharks can detect the blood of prey from a huge distance, one part of blood to 1 million parts of water. That's equal to one teaspoon in an average-sized swimming pool. So, impressive by human standards when it comes to the ability to distinguish scents underwater, but not from a mile away. The shark in question who can accomplish the swimming pool feat would be the lemon shark. There are others that can do it as well, but for now we're just going to concentrate on one kind of shark. Lemon sharks prefer crunchy foods, such as bony fish and crustaceans, so even if they did catch a whiff of human blood, odds are it wouldn't entice them into hunting down the person. Additionally, blood particles are carried to the sharks through water currents, which means it takes time. So unless you were stranded in the ocean, in which case you have a whole assortment of other problems to deal with, odds are good you could get out of the water and treat the wound before the shark was even aware of you being wounded to begin with. Additionally, ladies, if you're concerned about swimming in the ocean while menstruating, The science seems to be in our favor. The Florida Museum closes a short article on the topic with the statement, "If someone is attempting to maximize reduction of risks, staying out of the water during menstruation is one step that can be taken. However, many people safely dive while menstruating, and we have continued to see no obvious pattern of increased attacks." In the end, it comes down to what you're comfortable with. Next, let's move into a couple other senses that sharks possess: electroreception and changes in pressure. Electroreception first. Next time you're in an aquarium and have the opportunity to see a shark up close, if you look very closely, you may notice small black dots on the head and snout. These pores house jelly-filled organs called ampullae of Lorenzini, inside of which are extremely sensitive receptors. The receptors can pick up slight changes in electrical fields. These fields could be generated by the earth, perhaps allowing for the incredible sense of direction sharks possess, or by the muscle contractions of their prey. For example, a hammerhead shark will slowly cruise along the sandy ocean floor, waiting to pick up the subtle movements of a stingray that is completely buried. Now, onto the pressure changes, or more specifically, the lateral line. This is another series of pores that you can see if you look carefully. They are located all along the side of the shark from head to tail. These pores are not filled with jelly-like organs, but instead allow water to pass through them. The shark is able to then sense changes in the water pressure. The changes in pressure can be used for navigation, creating a pressure map of the area, similar to echolocation, if I'm understanding it correctly. The next two things I'd like to look at are facts that were given by Hooper in the movie Jaws. Arguably one of my favorite films, but not a great source of reliable information about sharks. At one point, relatively early in the movie, Hooper says, "Out there is a perfect engine, an eating machine that is a miracle of evolution. It swims and eats and makes little baby sharks. That's all." This is a commonly held belief that sharks are mindless killers. As we learn more about sharks, and the great white in particular, this idea is losing its appeal. Worldwide shark attacks only account for a reported 2 to 4 deaths per year out of roughly 10 attacks. In nearly every case where a shark attacks a person and is unprovoked, it is because they have mistaken us for a prey item, like a seal or turtle. Once it's bitten down, the shark will realize that what it has in its mouth is not the tasty food item it was expecting, and it will leave. So what about the theory of a rogue shark that Hooper brings up? Well, this is a largely discredited theory that comes to us courtesy of Sir Victor Copelson, an Australian surgeon, in a 1933 issue of the Medical Journal of Australia, and then again in his book Shark Attacks in 1958. The theory of the rogue shark claims that some sharks develop a taste for human flesh and will continue to attack until they themselves are killed, reminiscent of the two lions in Sasavo, who hunted rail workers in 1898, inspiring the movie The Ghost in the Darkness. The truth of the matter is that researchers can only point to one instance where they are sure that the same shark attacked multiple people, and there is no evidence of sharks developing an appreciation for human meat. As I have already stated, many shark attacks are cases of mistaken identity. So that's a very brief dive into sharks and some of our misconceptions about them. We are constantly learning more about these majestic predators, but at the end of the day, there is a lot that we simply don't know. And as with most things humanity doesn't understand, we fear them. That fear has resulted in massive cullings of sharks, making us their greatest predator, and perhaps a better fit for the mindless killer label in some respects. Education and conservation are keywords when it comes to most any living thing, and sharks are no exception. If you'd like to learn more about sharks, I would recommend sharktrust.org. Additionally, if you'd like to know more about the rogue theory, check out the article "How Realistic is the Shark Science in the Shallows?" by L.K. Ward on smithsonian.com, in which he interviews shark researcher Chris Lowe about the 2016 movie, The Shallows. And if you're interested in Shark Week, you can catch it on the Discovery Channel or Discovery Plus the rest of the week, July 12th through 18th, starting at 8 p.m. I am looking forward to the Expedition Unknown episode tonight and recommend checking out this year's launch episode from last night, Crikey, It's Shark Week, with Robert Irwin. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it, as well as subscribing and sharing. If you'd like to directly help me, you can head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened or click the link in the show notes. If you have any topics you'd like to hear me cover or questions or comments about this or past stories, you can send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as STWH Podcast, but be aware I'm not particularly active at this moment. Look, Chief, you can't go off half-cocked looking for vengeance against a fish. That shark isn't evil. It's not a murderer. It's just obeying its own instincts. Trying to get retribution against a fish is crazy. Another excerpt from Peter Benchley's Jaws.